From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Mission District.
Fremont.
El Cerrito.
O-Town, baby.
Lake Merritt.
Temescal.
Tenderloin.
Treasure Island.
Richmond, California.
Coming up, we'll head north from San Francisco to meet one of the last speakers of a homegrown language.
The rickshaw is the sound of bed springs when a newly couple spends their first night in bed at night, so bed springs squeaking. Go rickshaw, 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 you know.
Bootling translated. Then we'll visit a state park where the past and present live side by side.
Both the Chinese and the Italians sort of started out as fishermen here and then went on and left a lot of those traditions behind. So a lot of their cultures, you know, boats and the rig and all those things are such the everyday meditation of these people.
We're getting back to our roots today on Cross Currents. Think of a valley in California known for innovation and communication. Silicon Valley is likely to come to mind. But there's another far more remote place you might not be as familiar with. Boonville, population 1,035. It's located a few hours north of San Francisco in the Anderson Valley. And about a dozen people in this tiny town speak a homegrown language called Boontling.
Nook was strong, and the ball bell jeamer had neemer. Now it's the yielding pipe to the chigal nook for gorms for the ball bell jeamer. The nook was empty and the gorms were strung, and the ball bell jeamer had neemer.
For those of you who don't speak Boontling, that was old Mother Hubbard.
Mother Hubbard went to her cupboard for food for her poor dog.
People started speaking Boontling in the late 1800s. It was a more demure time, so locals needed code words to talk about subjects unfit for many ears. Now, only a few people speak it at all. KALW's Liz Pfeffer and Christina Loring took the dusty road to Boonville to track down those remaining linguists.
When we enter Boonville's Central Drag, we're not surprised to find the usual tourist fare.
It's Main Street USA, with souvenir shops, B&Bs, and cafes. Real Norman Rockwell. And then there's the Redwood Drive-In.
The name doesn't really do it justice. It's a gas station / greasy spoon that's been here forever.
Yeah, it's mostly local hangout.
Boonville's oldest residents convene at the drive-in every day at 4 o'clock.
See, that deacon that came out there, I heart Bilgit. That out there, see him sitting out there.
And right smack in the middle is Wes Smoot. He's the unofficial king of Boonville.
I heart Bilgit on that.
That's him speaking Boontling fluently, which is rare these days.
The drive-in is like being in a time capsule. It feels like the 1950s inside. Smoot and his crew have been coming here for decades.
It was really fun when you had four or five like this in here, you know. It's hard to keep it alive, though, because we get to using it and nobody knows what we're talking about.
Outside the walls of the drive-in, everything has changed. There's only a few people around who can still speak Boontling, and Smoot's trying to keep it going the best he can.
Today, there's only really one other person Smoot can speak Boontling with, Donald Pardini.
We didn't know anything about Boontling when we came to town, but we learned a lot from listening to them chat.
Fairly young fella, bald little dame he had.
If you didn't catch that, ball means good.
He told me he was interested in Boontling. He wanted to know about it, you know. And he knew as much about it as I did. Every time I'd tell him a word, he'd tell me what it meant.
Who the hell was he?
He was from Frisk. A bright lighter. He was a bright lighter.
A bright lighter is someone from outside Boonville. That's how Christina and I were introduced a lot.
Never saw him, and he wrote me the ballest card thanking me you ever saw.
Did you have the letter that some Kimmy... That
half-brother of mine wrote.
Kimmy's Boontling for man.
Now, that was a masterpiece there. Yeah, I had to get the big book to understand it.
The big book Smoot's talking about is a history of Anderson Valley with a glossary of Boontling words. It was written in the 70s by a Chico State professor named Charles C. Adams.
But there's no recorded history of Boontling, how it started and why. Which is funny, because the language is an oral history of Boonville. There are 1,500 words, and every one of them tells a story.
Well, the most common word used in the whole language is ball. And The word is originated from the ball brand shoe. Years ago, there was what they called a ball brand shoe, and it was B-A-L-L. And on the instep, on the sole, right in front of the heel, there's a little red ball on the shoe. And that, at that time, was the best shoe money could buy. You couldn't buy a better shoe than that. So the language adopted ball as a good. Anything is ball is good. That's the best there is.
Since we were standing on the soil of Bootling's birthplace, we decided to tour the town, get our mics dirty, and try to find out more about the origin from different locals.
Back when we came into Boonville, we saw this sign for a barn sale, tucked back from the road we were exploring. So we follow it up this kind of spooky driveway, and all of a sudden we see this Americana scene with used couches and bed frames out on the yard, and a shack with a sign on the roof that says, Jailhouse Rocks.
And then we go inside the big red barn, and there's this husband and wife running the register for their church, nestled between stacks of chairs and porcelain dolls and wicker baskets up to the ceiling, and a few patrons.
My name is Bryce, and I live in Boonville now, but I'm originally from Minnesota. I've heard a couple words here and there, but I don't hear it spoken very often.
Do you have any idea where it came from, what the origin is?
Yeah, I heard that the women who used to occupy this valley doing work out in the field it was kind of their secret language.
After the barn sale, we duck into the Anderson Valley Historical Society, which is actually the place where children used to learn bootling. It was later moved across the street when a newer elementary school was built.
This one wooden building taught all the K-12 students in Boonville, and everyone still calls it the Little Red Schoolhouse. Now it's stuffed to the rafters with donated furniture, personal items, and farm equipment. Volunteer docent Robert Nimmons shows us around.
We've heard several stories that the adults developed it so they could talk, that the kids didn't know what they were saying. The kids developed it so they could talk, so the adults didn't know what they were saying.
Next, we hit up the Evergreen Cemetery nearby,
which doesn't actually have any living people.
But it proves to us that bootling's been around for a long time. There are phrases etched onto the graves, like the one for James Bruce Dean.
But a wee slib in the Ike harps for this plenty ball Kimmy to be slow lopin' in the Skype region.
So with no one to interview here, we decide to go somewhere more populated, the Anderson Valley Brewing Company.
The bar is in a barn with one huge room and super high ceilings, so voices carry. When we ask around about where bootling came from, this is what people say.
Honestly, I have no idea. I know the dialect has a lot to do with sex, drinking, and drugs. That's about all I know.
And as we quickly learn, a lot of the bootling words or phrases are used so locals can talk about more taboo subjects. Everything from alcoholics to pyromaniacs to, of course, sex.
Yeah.
Do you know any words?
Yeah, burlapping is f***.
There's a saying here, the home of the ballest burlapping Steinberg known to Kimmy is home of the best f***ing beer known to man. So, I mean, our engineer here, he speaks it fluently. Just kind of book learned it and like talking with Wes.
So the only person at the brewery who can speak bootling learned it from talking to Wes Smoot. We've got to talk to him to get the real origin story. I can tell that
we are gonna be friends. Smoot lives in a small blue house with a white picket fence on the outskirts of town with his girlfriend, Marion Crosby.
I was born and raised here in the valley. And my ancestors were one of the first settlers of the valley.
Coincidentally, Crosby grew up in this house, which Smoot used to share with his late wife. That's how small Boonville is. Smoot was born and raised in Anderson Valley, when he says it felt more like a close-knit family than what it is today.
And I've always said that in order to speak the language and understand the language and understand the people, you've got to know something about the history of the valley.
Since the valley was an isolated farming community during that time, there weren't a lot of newcomers, but it was one who came to town, he says, that brought about what we now know as the language of bootling.
The girl in San Francisco who got pregnant when she was out clergy. She wasn't married.
She wasn't married, he says, and that was a problem because her family were high society people.
And they didn't want to go through the embarrassment of having a pregnant daughter in their society down there until after she had the baby.
So they sent her to Anderson Valley to have the baby.
In the hop fields, the women wanted to talk about this girl being pregnant and going to have this baby, but they didn't want to embarrass her talking right in front of her.
And they started inventing words, which caught on with the husbands.
The husband thought, well, that's a real good idea. So they went to the sheep shearing camps the next day, started using some of the words, and it just blossomed out from there.
Wes Smoot's seen the valley go from a rancher's paradise to a logging boom town.
Everything in this valley, clear back from the time it was first founded about 1850, it went in cycles. First there was prune orchards and apple orchards and then grapes. And now I notice there's getting to be a lot of olives. So someday the vineyards is going to fold up and move out, and the olives is going to take over. And it's just a cycle that keeps turning over every maybe 50, 75 years. But sooner or later, the grapes are going to come to an end. That's why I'm not going to plant no grapes.
Smoot left the valley to serve in the Korean War for a couple of years and then worked for Caltrans, which brought him all over the state. When he returned to Anderson Valley, it seemed unfamiliar. Things had changed.
Because at one time, I knew everybody in the valley and how many dogs and cats they had and everything, you know. And then you come back a total stranger, and been a stranger ever since.
He tells us that people may say hello to him in town, but he doesn't have the slightest idea who they are.
Wine and tourism are bringing more people through Boonville than ever before. And Smoot thinks that small-town feeling has gone away. Like the shifting economies and younger generations that seem to cycle through the valley, bootling, he says, is disappearing.
And that's the trouble we're running into now with a lot of the outside people coming in here. They come in here with big money and big vineyards and wine tasting rooms and wineries and whatnot. And, oh, boy, we're going to make bootling out of this, you know. Well, it just don't work at they just don't take the time and the effort to really learn the language.
But Wes Smoot does. In fact, at the age of 81, he's still inventing bootling words.
And now, another fellow and I, we've kind of come up with a new word now. In your wildlife, the salmon, when the salmon go up the stream and spawns, they do every 4 years, you know, they spawn. Once they spawn, they die. You know, and they go back downstream. They're dead. They're going downstream. Well, when you get our age, we're downstreamers. We're getting ready to go back downstream now. Like the old salmon said, we're downstreamers now.
Maybe. But if you pop in the Boonville Drive-In around 4 o'clock, you would never know it.
The coffee's still hot and the conversation's still ball. In Boonville, I'm Christina Loring.
And I'm Liz Pfeffer for Cross Currents.
Thanks to all the Kimmies in Boonville for harping Tiedrich with our beermen. That was a beampsh. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Boonville is one of the many towns born out of a boom time. The gold rush fever brought thousands of people to California to seek their fortunes. There were hopeful gold diggers, merchants to outfit them, and laborers to build the railroads and work the mines. Right now in the Bay Area, we're in the middle of a new boom time. Technology companies are attracting people from all over the world, and those new residents are changing the place we live. With so much that's new, it can be easy to forget the old. But there's a place in Marin County where the past is still very much with us, China Camp State Park. China Camp used to be a settlement where some Chinese immigrants made their homes when many of those laborers who came here to work in the 1800s were forced out of San Francisco. 88-year-old Frank Kwan still lives there. Frank's grandfather was the first Kwan to live there in the 1890s. Back then, China Camp was one of a few dozen fishing villages that dotted the Bay Area's shores. When the settlement became a state park in the late 1970s, Frank Kwan's lifelong residency was written into the park's general plan. And he still lives in the wooden shacks where he grew up, carrying on the work of his family, welcoming visitors to his home. As KALW's Julie Kane reports, if you want to know the history of China Camp and understand its future, that is where you'd want to go. Here's Julie.
Frank Kwan's porch is not really a porch. It's a couple of weather-worn picnic tables on the gravel beach just a few feet from the bay.
Hey, Frank.
Hi, how are we doing?
Good. Thirsty? Thirsty,
we're here. Right now, it's cocktail hour. It's a daily ritual for Frank Kwan and his friend John Muir.
My name's John Muir. No relation.
Yes, not that John Muir.
I'm Frank Kwan.
You got a knife, Frank?
The man.
The two of them have been friends for almost 20 years. Muir has a wood shop a few buildings down the beach from Kwan's house. It all started when Kwan stopped by the San Francisco Maritime National Historical Park.
Yeah, I went over there a few times looking for a part for a engine. Yeah, that's where I first met him, and then tangled with his boss several times. Yeah.
Growled at him, I'm sure.
Growled at him.
We're like, he said, you got a whole box of parts in there. You know, why can't I get one of those? It's crazy.
Muir works for the National Park Service. He's a builder and curator of old boats. And the engine part Kwan wanted was a historic artifact to everybody except Frank Kwan. For him, it was just something he needed to keep things running at China Camp. And that piqued John Muir's interest.
I talked to him more about it, and he started ranting about that again, and finally just said, hey, listen, you don't understand. We're trying to do the same thing. We'll see what we can do. I remember getting kind of flustered with him, and he just started kind of laughing. I was like, I gave it back to him a little bit.
There's a rope fitting there, John. It's going to be tricky to get that out of there.
These days, the two friends get out on the water together whenever they can. Usually, they take out Frank's old fishing boat. It's seen better days.
It's been actually the last couple of years, lots of repairs, some few mishaps, and lots of effort just to keep it up and running, which I think is just good for Frank. I think he loses his mind when the boat doesn't work. So he's also damn handsome when he's at the helm here running it. You gonna shoot between, Frank?
Oh, yeah. Hope we don't get stuck.
They come out just to be on the water, but sometimes they try their hand at catching shrimp. Kwan says he used to bring it in by the ton, but nowadays they're lucky if they catch a hatful. Water diversion and overfishing have killed off much of the sea life. It's a part of Kwan's life that's gone for good.
It's sad. In a 30-year period, it's gone, and never going to come back. And that's the hard part, you know.
Be interviewing Frank every night and writing things down and recording this whole experience, but Lynn is just living it.
We're sitting in Muir's wood shop at China Camp. It's where he spends a couple days every week working on boats and talking to Kwan.
Somebody was just telling me about this quote from Wendell Berry that was about if you meet somebody like that, you should ask them questions and, you know, record what they say and think. But if you can actually get a chance just to be with them or to be one of them, that's first.
It's actually a poem by Wendell Berry, and Muir thinks about it a lot. It's called The Record.
My old friend tells us how the country changed, how the creek ran 3 weeks after a good rain, long ago, no more. You'd have to know this country mighty well before I could tell you where.
Muir's latest project is a historic Italian fishing boat that he's building by looking at faded photographs. The bay used to be full of these boats, but they don't come with plans.
Both the Chinese and the Italians sort of started out as fishermen here and then went on and left a lot of those traditions behind for more lucrative businesses or just rising through the social scale. So a lot of their culture is you know, and the boats and the rig and all those things are such the everyday meditation of these people.
About 10 years ago, he built a 19th century Chinese fishing boat called a junk. Just like with the Italian boat, Muir built it from old photos. And the burned-out husks of a couple of junks they dredged up out of the mud next to Frank's house. Muir named the reconstructed boat the Grace Kwan, after Frank's mother.
My mother was Caucasian, raised by a Chinese person as a child, so she spoke Chinese fluently.
A white woman who lived among Chinese people her whole life, at a time when that was unheard of. She first came to China Camp on an outing with a friend, and that's when she met Frank's dad.
They had to go to Nevada to get married, and they couldn't get married here in California.
Yeah. Why couldn't they get married?
Because it wasn't allowed. Mixed marriage.
It was illegal, but she moved to China Camp with Frank's dad anyway and lived out the rest of her life there. She ran the family businesses, a general store, a cafe, and boat rentals for weekend picnickers. She'd grown up an orphan, and she treated everyone who came there like they were her own kids. China Camp still has that same feel, even long after her death.
And my young friend says, "Have him speak this into recorder. It is precious. It should be saved." I know the panic of that wish to save the vital knowledge of the old times, handed down, for it is rising off the earth, fraying away in the wind in the coming day. Frank, one thing that might be nice is to, if you could man a stern line, because we'll hold that until we get off. That way I can power out, and then we'll cast off.
Yeah, get over there. Okay? Get your boat over here.
Get my boat turned into the current.
The boat named for Frank's mother is Seaworthy. It's about 40 feet long, wooden, and stained black, with one tall mast and a copper-colored sail shaped kind of like a bat's wing. It looks old, and it looks handmade.
Is there any Frank Kwan in this boat?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, Frank was really good because he's a fisherman. He's pretty, wants to get the boat running and things going, and he's also Depression era, so he doesn't want to spend a damn nickel on it. And so there's a lot of, he was great because, you know, our tendency is always to go fancier, cleaner, perfect fits. And Frank's like, get that thing nailed in, you know. So I think Frank saw anywhere there's a rough edge and, that's Frank in there, I think. And he was like our fancy police, you know. You guys, it's not a yacht, damn it, it's a workboat. Now, you get that thing nailed in there yet?
After another day's boat ride, we're back at the picnic table, Frank's porch. It's cocktail hour, and he set out olives, he brined himself, some cheese, and good bread.
He's pretty good company.
Oh, yeah, good company. We've always got somebody rolling in. Sometimes we have... You plan for two, and then always got six or seven.
Yeah, summer.
We always round up something for them to eat.
That's a kind of incredible thing about China Camp is, Grace grew up in an orphanage, and I'm feeling it too. Is that there's this whole sense that I'm just one of not many friends of theirs that forever that have been coming here, building boats, helping them straighten things out, take care of the place. Like it's a real orphanage sort of place. Where they just welcome, super welcoming. I mean, Frank still is in the middle of a park, and there's people coming by all the time. And, we'll just lay out a meal for whoever shows up, and just, it's like this spirit. And I think it's as a key factor in this place is that's this sort of orphanage spirit. I think that's the core of the place. And it's amazing, amazing thing. Live here as one who knows these things. Stay if you live. Listen and answer. Listen to the next one like him, if there is to be one. Be the next one like him, if you must.
There's a tradition in Chinese culture, one that Frank's mom taught him. When someone dies, you put a little food out for them, something they liked. It's a way to take care of people, to make sure they have what they need.
Oh, yeah,
well, Frank, we'll be putting out a little bit of scotch for you. good cheese.
A little shot of some cheese. A little single malt out, you know.
I don't know about that. No, okay, whatever you want.
For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.
That story was produced with help from Casey Miner, Ryan Miller, and Liz Pfeffer. If you want to see photos of China Camp, visit our website, kalw.org, and click on Cross Currents. And that's it for today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Leela Day, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Christina Loring, Daniel Moore, Liz Pfeffer, Raisu Sussman, Charlotte Silver, Stephen Short, and Melanie Young. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.